This is Jason Q. Citizen and Friends on today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Hello and welcome to the Jason Q. Citizen and Friends program as we navigate our way around and out from the tyranny that is put upon us on a daily basis to make us conform to an agenda that none of us know is legitimate. And here we are fighting our way out of the paper bag of Earth and all of the trouble that it comes with. Today, we watch out of Australia, a controversy like no other, that the Manly Rugby League Club in the National Rugby League competition, seven players have decided to stand down because the club, without consultation, decided to make this week's round a pride round, and therefore the whites of the jersey were replaced with the rainbow colours to support the LGBTQ movement. Unfortunately for the Manly Club, seven players decided that their religious convictions prevented them from wearing the jersey to come out there in support of what is equality. For all of us here listening, those of us who've been discriminated based on our medical choices, which was presumably protected by the Constitution, by the UN Charter on Human Rights, by the Nuremberg Protocol, by the very fact that the Holocaust even happened, would say that discrimination is entirely a different part of the world and is just selective now. So it's nice to see that seven football players have the strength of their convictions to say, no, we don't support this. Today we learn that the coach has come out and said that there was no consultation with the players or the management, and it was just a decision made just to feel good. Now, the problem we have with all of this is the old adage of sport and politics do not mix. And this is the reason why. You can't get 23-year-old young men paid $1 million a year to run around and throw a football around and expect them to be able to then become suburban politicians, for want of a better term, or ways to influence the way that we're doing it. Rugby league has a situation where it is obsessed with trying to expand its audience. And in the past, we've seen them bring in more and more women, which is great. The women NRL, the competition is superb. But there is an obsession to populate the commentary teams with an even amount of men and women in the game. And it is a men's sport. So there is a bit of a difference. Cricket's tried the same thing. Now, is it a case that they want to bring in the LGBT community in a rugby league? It seems kind of like polarity, opposite ends of a spectrum. But try they might. But perhaps what they need to do is just stay out of politics altogether. Now, more of what's going on in the world now is this whole idea that we've reached the point of the huge Orwellian revolution that's taking place, is taking place in real time, and now we're seeing the narrative fall apart. We have a term called gaslighting, where we get told one thing to make us feel like we're losing our minds, and it goes on and on and on. And we spent a show yesterday with Catherine Franklin talking about the ways in which it's used in the media. Today on the show, I'm delighted to have back Greg Mabry, who'll be on in a couple of minutes. And he's written a tremendous article on his Substack about this exact idea of the Orwellian doublespeak. And we're going to go through that. Now, Greg is a former history teacher. He's a brilliant writer and a great thinker, and he had his wake-up call around about 2008 when the GFC kind of came about and too big to fail became the new mantra. So it's interesting how history repeats itself. It's fascinating how it happens, and it's fascinating how the sleight of hand is the great trick that they use to be able to convince us that we're the crazy ones. Now, a couple of headlines to bring your attention to ideas that may come up in the discussion today with Greg. This is headline news from the last 24 hours. No one is talking about electric car deaths, so I have to, writes Scotty Kilmer, and this is referring to the amount of Tesla vehicles that are winding up in insurance claims being completely burnt out. Further comment is also made about the idea that these cars with their massive levels of torque accelerate like nothing else. all of a sudden 0 to 100 in 5 seconds, which was about the benchmark a few years ago for a great experience in a muscle car, became 0 to 100 in 3 seconds with the supercars. Well, now Elon Musk's best car is doing 0 to 100 in 1.9 seconds. This is beyond anything you see in superbike land. It's so fast. Then you have batteries, and then you have the ability of the flammability of batteries when these cars get hit, and you have a recipe for disaster. The article reports over 92,000 deaths as a result of electric cars. Move over a little bit more in the world of the double speak, and we find out that, according to Natural News, confirmed CDC changed the definitions of vaccines to force injections on the public. We used to know that a vaccine was a product that stimulates a person's immune system to produce immunity to a specific disease, and then it was changed to a preparation that is used to stimulate the body's immune response, preparation. And later on, we found vaccination used to be an injection that prevents a disease, and now a vaccination is the act of introducing a vaccine to the body to produce protection from a specific disease. So these are how the ways that they make things work for or against the system that they want to project on the people. Now, Harvey Risch has come out and said that antibodies triggered by COVID-19 vaccines are actually interfering with the people's immune systems as newer variants emerge. The two most widely used vaccines, Pfizer and Moderna, both work by sending mRNA to muscle cells where they produce a piece of spike protein. The spike protein triggers the production of antibodies, which are believed to help prevent and fight infection. The problem we have is that it's mutated and it's changed shape. So much to talk about, and we'll talk about Greg's article in a moment. At TNT Radio, we never go home. We are committed to bringing you our take on the biggest topics of our time. We broadcast live 24/7, online globally, no matter what. We've got you covered on TNT Radio.
Russia, gas prices, COVID mandates.
It just doesn't seem like anybody's doing anything about it.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Greg Mabry is a former history teacher and a brilliant writer. You must check out, if you haven't, gregmabry.substack.com for the way that he thinks and writes and puts things together. And it's just a beautiful way to see that journalism is flying today. And it reminds me of a point in the article, and I'll read you this one before I introduce Greg to air. The trick will be working out, most people will know where this quote comes from, but before I get to the punchline for you to work it out, you'll go, geez, that sounds like it was written just yesterday. Who controls the past controls the future. Who controls the present controls the past. In our time, political speech and writing are largely the defense of the indefensible. Such concepts as justice, liberty, and objective truth are still believed in. They may be illusions, but they are very powerful illusions. Journalism is printing what someone else doesn't want printed. Everything else is public relations. I reckon you've worked it out now. And last but not least, that perennial family favourite, Big Brother, is watching you. Greg Mabry, welcome to the show.
Jason, thank you very much for having us on again. Hope you're well.
Yes, it's certainly a battle of wits and wills and what have you. But if we're not down in the dumps and we've been knocked out, we're out there fighting and one foot in front of the other, and big haymakers going, and that means we're in this one, so we're doing well. How about yourself?
Yeah, not too bad. I'm doing okay. I unfortunately got some bad news last week. An old friend of mine dropped dead of a heart attack, which was very, very sad to hear. And I suspect that, in fact, it may have been a result of the vaccines. We'd talked about them. He had expressed reservations about having them, but I'm pretty sure he went ahead and did get the vaccination. I'm not quite sure. Maybe it was family pressure. I simply don't know. But I'm sure I'm not the only person of any of the listeners listening in today that know of somebody who has passed away suddenly and unexpected, whether it was from the vaccination or not, I don't know. But of course, it's happening with monotonous and tragic frequency, as we both know. And that is probably one of the most recurring motifs, I guess, if you like, of the recurring stories of our existence these days, you know. And I mean, if you have a look, for example, Mark Crispin Miller has a weekly post on his Substack page where he reports on, you know, the sudden deaths of various people right across the board, just ordinary people who have succumbed to, you know, some sort of serious illness, but mostly deaths he's reporting. And so, you know, it's just relentless. And, of course, we're now the current mantra by the powers that be is that, you know, we've got this new strain. This is happening here in Australia, of course. Everybody's calling out now for mandates for masks, fourth vaccinations, possibly lockdowns again. And again, you hinted it earlier on, Jason, just sort of some days, you know, we sort of think like we're moving forward on this thing, but, you know, then another day you get up and things just seem to be sort of taking another turn for the worse. And it's very, very exasperating. You know, I mean, I find it quite exasperating and frustrating, even though I've got quite a lot of good people around me in friends and family who do understand what's going on. So I don't really have a huge amount of people in my life that are pushing back against what I believe in. I've been successful actually in convincing a few people to look at things a little bit differently. And I think if we can do that, we're sort of, you know, we're probably making a little bit of progress. But just to finish up on all of this, you know, when I got this news last week, I thought, wow, you know, this was a really good friend. And it was the first time that I personally had been touched by somebody who had taken the vaccination. And, you know, whether or not, we'll probably never know just whether the vaccination was the thing that brought about his sudden heart attack. But, you know, I suspect that it probably was. And so, you know, for those listeners out there that have had people pass away suddenly, I can certainly understand how many people might feel about it all. So all in all, you know, things aren't looking all that sort of bright at the moment in terms of us moving forward with this thing, you know.
And what you've spoken about, firstly, Greg, let me just express my condolences, and anyone losing any friend, it's absolutely tragic. Life's cut short, and I really do feel for you.
Yeah.
And I'm sorry for your loss. And I'll just make this point too. I actually just came from a funeral today myself. It was actually a memorial service for one of our neighbours, a man who was just 56 years of age, that he actually suffered from a poisoning from a medicine that was given to him some 15 years ago that shortened his life, that basically destroyed his organs. Unfortunately, he wasn't aware that he could actually sue the maker and the doctors, and so he never got to that stage in his life. And it exposed yet another tragedy of the system, that if you're alive, apparently the lawyer said he could sue, but the moment he dies, it doesn't go to his estate. All bets are off. Yeah. So in other words, you can make a medicine that kills. Just make sure you kill them before you get taken to court. That's how disastrous that is. But if I can just share that moment, because I think it's really important now with our listeners to know that none of us will be unaffected by the loss.
Exactly. In
this scenario. Right. I buried an uncle last month. He was in his 80s, but he'd been multi-vaccinated, and cancers came back very quickly, which wouldn't have happened otherwise. Of course, you know, you share that on social media, you'll get shot down, but we all know what's really going on. In October of 2020, I buried my stepfather. He was a COVID isolation suicide. That's about as worse as you could possibly get at that stage. That was a man who was... Yeah. He was a man who was still, you know, vibrant, working, surfing, skiing, doing all of that stuff. And in the lockdowns, just basically wiped him out. He just went into a tailspin, put himself into a hospital for some respite, came out, and I just thought he was going to be okay. And a week later, he was gone. He just decided that was it. It's not just, they're not just the only deaths, but that's three that are very close in my own area, and two of them in the last month. it's almost too much already, and we haven't even seen near the worst of it. These are people that have got to the other side of 50, and two of them went on to have full lives. So where we go next, I don't know. But like you said, it gets you down. And if you're one of the lucky ones that gets to fight on tomorrow, I think we just get on with the idea of fighting in their memories, and fighting to prove that we were right, we knew what we were doing, and it does give me enough spinal resolve. It gives me that strength in my spine when I get up to go, you know what, the gloves are up and I'm going to keep punching today. And some days you're down. I get messages like that from friends on social media. I'm really down at the moment. And these are people that are, you know, out there and, you know, 5,000 friends and 1,000 likes on a post. Not that that means anything, but they're leaders in their little communities and they're feeling the pinch. But what's nice about it is the ability that we can all sort of share in this pain as we go through the situation and help each other through, because any loss is profound. But when you know the reason why and you've been gaslit and being confused and told that it's not the case, it's just another level of the most extreme form of abuse. And it's perfect timing that we get to talk about this on today's show, given that you've written this article about doublespeak and Orwellian. It's just exactly so timely. We've got to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to move into this brilliant work that you've done and just sort of stretch it out a little bit and bring it back and explain to the audience, because I really want them to all of you listening to go and check out Greg's Substack. We'll mention it again after the break so you can go have a look, but we will discuss it in this show. Don't go anywhere. You're on TNT Radio.
You should hear what Mike Ryan's talking about.
The ABN is not anti-vaccination, nor are they pro-vaccination. They are pro-choice. Meryl, thanks for joining us.
Mike, thank you so much for having me on again. I appreciate that. Yeah,
Dr. Tess Laurie says there's no evidence that these jabs will be beneficial for children. What do you think about that?
Well, it's absolutely the case. It's actually the case for anyone under the age of 30, because they are at such a low level of risk from a COVID infection, if that even is a thing, that the only thing they're actually at risk from is the risk of the jab, not at all from the risk of the infection. And infants and young children are known to not be at risk, and most of them have already had COVID and recovered from it. So, you know, there is no benefit for them. There is only risk.
Mike Ryan on today's News Talk, TNT Radio.
Affordable housing, we can build that. Sustainable housing, we can build that. At MIT Modular, we understand the importance of housing for all and the importance of design, cost, and functionality. Our goal is to meet the needs of our growing population by converting shipping containers to livable units. If you're like-minded and in a position to invest in something meaningful and life-changing, we want to hear from you. We are a team of professional architects, engineers, and financial and tax experts dedicated to offering unique solutions that provide a brighter future. Our Opportunity Zone Fund offers investors both real estate and operating business diversification, 5-year tax deferral on capital gains, annual tax benefits, and ultimately tax-free appreciation potential. There are Opportunity Zones all over America. If you're interested in learning more about our services, need affordable housing, or want to participate in creating a new vision for tomorrow, give us a call in the U.S. on 385-985-5702. Or read more at mitmodular.com. MIT Modular. We can build that.
News more twisted than soap operas and with worse actors. Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. We've all been educated in the idea that governments operate under the idea of problem, reaction, solution. There's another way of looking at it, the noble cause, and then the noble lie. Greg, the way that they set these things up is the agenda. The way that we get confused by it all and it all seems too difficult is the great trickery. It's all a part of this sleight of hand. How did you work it out for yourself when it started, and what prompted you to put this magnificent piece of work together?
Well, obviously, we've mentioned George Orwell before, and we've mentioned him previously, and of course, not just for people like myself, but for people like myself, it's difficult to escape, some reference to Orwell in just about anything you talk about, particularly when it comes to propaganda and censorship and anything to do with, say, the New World Order or the Great Reset. You'll find so many of the of what's happening at the moment resonating in Orwell's work. You also find it, of course, in people like Huxley and various other of these authors who wrote these dystopian sort of futuristic kind of scenarios where we weren't seeing and we're never going to see the best outcomes of human nature. In other words, the abuse of power and privilege has always been there. And, of course, people like Aldous Huxley and George Orwell captured that marvellously. Again, one sort of occasionally sort of wonders what these guys would think if they were brought back to the here and now and actually looked around. And, I mean, on some level they probably wouldn't be surprised, but I think even, people like Orwell and Huxley and many others that wrote in that same vein, if they were to sort of see, for example, where technology or where the technocrats or the technocracy has gone or is seeking to take us, they'd be probably horrified. They'd certainly would be amazed. And but for myself, Orwell's probably the biggest touchstone. Orwell is touched on, obviously, in that article that you mentioned that I wrote. But I'd like to actually put in, I suppose you would call it a bit of a plug, but it's not really. It's mentioning somebody who, in my view, picked up on a lot of what Orwell was doing. In fact, he was an Australian, a fellow by the name of Alex Carey. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with him, Jason, or not, but I actually mentioned him in that article. And Carey's work was, he was a bit of a pioneer, really, in looking at, propaganda and how the corporate entity were able to, engage in sort of this misinformation and, putting out propaganda from the corporate perspective as distinct from the government perspective. And Carey was absolutely brilliant. He actually committed suicide himself, I think, in 1988. I don't know the details behind it, but he was an extraordinary fellow. Even he was mentioned by even John Pilger, sung his praises, and in terms of the work that he was doing. But I'll just run off a quick quote here for you, Jason, because it does pertain to a lot of this, the Orwellian stuff, particularly to do with propaganda. This is what Carey said. Now, he wrote this, I think, probably in the mid-80s, thereabouts, but he said, "It is arguable that the success of business propaganda in persuading us for so long that we are free from propaganda is one of the most significant propaganda achievements of the 20th century." Now, that was beautiful. As frightening as the implications of what Carey was saying there, it really summed it up beautifully in terms of what we are experiencing now. Now, bear in mind that this guy wrote this over 40 years ago. Yeah. And, we're seeing a lot of this kind of stuff, manifest itself now. There's for listeners who are listening in and want to follow up on Alex Carey, and I do recommend that they do. His book is readily available. It's actually a book of essays and writings and research articles, very eminently readable. But the book itself, encapsulates pretty much sort of much of what we're talking about these days. The book's called Taking the Risk Out of Democracy, okay? And the subtitle is Corporate Propaganda Versus Freedom and Liberty. And, of course, we've only got to talk about the Great Resetters are trying to do, is they're basically effectively dismantling democracy as we know it. And, of course, they're doing it via not just corporate propaganda but government propaganda. And really it's all about curbing our freedoms and our liberties, dismantling democracy and going into basically a technocratic or, if you like, let's call it what it is, a fascist state, fascism being by definition an amalgam of government and corporate power. So that's where we're heading. And of course, as a result of this, this is essentially what you see in things like Brave New World in 1984. That's the Huxley and the Orwell touchstones for most people. And anybody that steps out of line or anybody that sort of doesn't get with the flow or goes with the narrative, they'll the phrase gaslighting has become very, very common, as we now know. And that's got an interesting history, that particular phrase. It comes from a 1940s movie where a doctor tried to convince his wife that she was going crazy. He wanted to get rid of her. And long story behind that, but the movie was simply called Gaslight. I don't know if it's available on streaming services, but people might want to actually go and have a look at that film, because I remember seeing it as a kid, but it was only just recently that the phrase gaslighting came into vogue. It's a great term. I've actually been gaslit by friends and relatives and co-workers and what have you. I think everybody will have experienced some form of gaslighting, where it's effectively people talking about you behind your back or trying to undermine your reputation or trying to call into question your sanity or your abilities or whatever. And this is the sort of thing that we see happening and playing out in the larger public arena, particularly with things like COVID. Oh, you don't want to get the vaccination. What's wrong with you? Or aren't you sort of, don't you want to sort of avoid catching COVID or spreading it to somebody else? And so people will talk about you as being irresponsible. They'll say things about you without actually realizing that you've done a little bit of homework. You understand what's going on here, and so you've made an actual choice. So people will do all sorts of things in which to, to undermine somebody else's point of view, whether it's governments or government representatives, whether it's corporate people, whether it's your own friends or relatives, will do things that will try and undermine you. So these are the kinds of things that we see happening all of the time. But in all my time being around, I haven't seen it happen more frequently or more profoundly, say, in the last 2.5 years. It's insidious, really. It is.
Certainly is. We're going to quickly pause for news headlines. When we return, we're going to delve a little bit deeper into this and expand. Don't go anywhere. You're on TNT Radio.
With a quick check of what's making news, I'm Matt Boyland. Brazil has ignored pleas from Ukrainian President Vladimir Zelensky to join in on sanctions against Russia, which have so far backfired on the West. Japan has executed a man who killed 7 people in a stabbing rampage in Tokyo 14 years ago. And an Australian woman has been charged with murdering her 3 small children after they were left to perish in a house fire.
Globalist agendas, democratic rights at risk, corruption, propaganda. It never stops. Listen to TNT Radio anywhere you go. Ask Alexa or Google to play TNT Radio or download the TNT Radio app for free from the App Store or Google Play. Today's news talk. This is TNT Radio.
Welcome back to Jason Q, Citizen and Friends. Not many people would know, but Aldous Huxley, the author of Brave New World, once taught George Orwell at Eton College. Such a small world indeed. And I bet if Orwell were alive today or was brought back to life and someone asked him what was the date, he'd look around and say, New Year's Eve, 1983. It feels like we're just about there, right?
Yeah. Very much. It seriously is frightening, as I will say to anybody that listens. You know, we're living at the moment in a time of profound change, and I would say, you know, in a time of profound instability in terms of, you know, what we have taken for granted in the past. Again, I'll make quick reference here, Jason, to Alex Carey, and again, I'll mention the name of that book, Taking the Risk Out of Democracy. Well worth following up, listeners, is having a look at it. And just understanding what Carey was trying to say. But for him, there were 3 significant developments in the 20th century. One of them, of course, was the growth of democracy. And, of course, we saw that really flowering, I suppose, better than it previously come to the fore after the World War II, you know, and of course we had the baby boom, a growth boom, which happened in all Western countries, yep. And, you know, the growth of democracies. We had, you know, basically a lot of the colonial empires imploded around about that time, and we saw this huge growth of independent nations in what was then called the Third World, now called, you know, the developing countries. So democracy itself was a huge development in the 20th century. But along with that, too, we saw the growth of corporate power. Now, that really began back in the late 1890s with the robber barons days, but particularly after World War II. So along with the growth of democracy, we have seen this incredible growth and expansion in corporate power, which later transpired into, obviously, with all of these amalgamations and mergers and acquisitions that came later on in the 80s and the 90s, and then with neoliberalism. We've seen this massive increase in corporate power, which is really going from strength to strength. On the contrary, democracy is, nobody would claim that democracy is going from strength to strength now. It's completely and totally under assault. And once again, the last 2.5 years, for anybody that might have had doubts about that before then, the last 2.5 years is sufficient evidence to, you know, to convince anybody that's willing to sort of open their mind to it that democracy is really under attack. The great resetters don't want to know about democracy. The corporate agenda, there's no place in the corporate agenda for a real democracy. But the other thing that that Kerry said in as a follow-up to those things, there was the growth of democracy and then the growth of corporate power. He went on to say that the growth of propaganda as a means of protecting that same corporate power against democracy was the other third thing that he determined was one of the most significant developments, say, in the 20th century. And of course, again, with that third one, the growth of propaganda as a means of protecting corporate power has now really come to the fore. And again, it's before COVID came along, even I would never have imagined that we would have seen, not just with propaganda, but of course the censorship thing as well. And you can't really talk about propaganda without actually talking about censorship as well. The two go hand in hand. And so, look, Kerry, you know, sort of nailed it very, very well. And I guess I plug him because he's not very well known, and I don't think he's ever been given his due, even though people, John Pilger and Noam Chomsky, for example. Noam Chomsky wrote the foreword to this particular book. So he was held in very, very high regard. But also plugging because exactly he was a pioneer of a lot of these ideas, and sadly, again, with a lot of these people who are ahead of their time, their message perhaps didn't reach as wide an audience as possible. But certainly, like Orwell, like Huxley, like Chomsky, and various others who made all these different predictions and about where society and the political economy might head, we're now seeing it. Come to the fore in spades now.
It's quite remarkable how you've put all that together and explained for our listeners the concept that propaganda was actually, the growth in propaganda was to protect corporates against democracy. Many people not realizing the connection there, but thinking propaganda is just an arm of the government just getting its way. But if it gets its way, it's got to be serving its own agenda, and its agenda is simply the connection with corporations and the ability of the corporates to use financial power, amongst other things, to get their way and to provide the necessary things that governments want to provide for their people. So, in other words, they become each other's middleman, so to speak, and therefore protect each other. There's so much in all of this that needs to be pulled apart to understand the mechanics of organization here, because the people still generally believe that the government works for them, yet also believes that the government rules them. And so it can't be both. And yet they want to have a sort of a foot in both camps. Yeah, they look out for me and they're really telling me what to do here. And they can't quite put their finger on it. But to be able to divide it, to be able to explain the concept of propaganda, and another way of saying that would be the greatest trick the devil ever pulled was convincing you he didn't exist. For propaganda to not exist is the best way to make it work for you. And there we are. There's just so much to be able to pull apart, to try and understand and to work through, because that is the concept of these discussions, isn't it? It's to be able to recognize where it is that we've been taken for a ride in all of this, and why it is that we feel the way we do, and how is it that governments can turn their backs on the people and then defend, for example, the vaccine makers get indemnity, the vaccine takers get gaslit. And how does that work when the government is doing this for the people or pretending to do it for the people? This is propaganda 101 in real time, right?
It is. Each day I am just absolutely amazed at how many people, and very intelligent people, very well-educated people, very self-aware people, or at least those who think they're self-aware, succumb to this propaganda and don't see that a lot of the information that is being put out there is misinformation, it's disinformation, it's outright lies. And they also what they also miss is the amount of information, good information, that is being withheld from us. And of course, I think people are starting to realize that now, when you've got these social media platforms who are so blatantly sidelining people and black banning people, or shadow banning them, or completely banning them, as I've been now completely banned on Twitter. And so that has become so much more obvious. It's almost like now propaganda and censorship in Western democracies used to be a relatively subtle thing. And I guess that was something that that has completely changed now. It's not subtle anymore. But having said that, I am still, for that reason alone, completely and utterly amazed that, because it is so much more obvious, that more people don't get it. Now, I'm sure there are some people that are getting it, but as I want to say, we need a critical mass of people to get it, and we need them to get it very, very quickly, because we don't have much more time, Jason.
No, we don't. Now, I want to bring up Noam Chomsky just for a moment. He was the one of the most famous intellectuals around. He's about 90 years of age. He's still doing the rounds and being interviewed by all sorts of people. And I watched a few different things. And, of course, he's famous for winning the Academy Award for that documentary, Manufacturing Consent, which one would believe would be talking exactly about what we're talking about in terms of corporate media. I saw an interview he did a few years back, and it was probably in the early age of the Trump, or in that campaign, so around 2016, it felt like, and lots of things were being revealed at the time. And he was interviewed by a young journalist, I suppose a citizen journalist, and she said, "Do you believe in conspiracy theories?" And he said, "No, I refuse to believe in conspiracy theories, because I refuse to believe that our institutions could be corrupt." Now, I've found that to be a profound statement, because, again, I never linked the two formally the way that Chomsky did. But the fact that he did that, that confirmed it, that he saw conspiracy theory is linked to the idea that it's the institutions that are meant to be causing it, and they can't possibly be doing it because they can't possibly, in Chomsky's eyes, be seen to be corrupt. Now, that says two things to me. Either he's a very, very useful idiot, which he can't be, or he's in a way controlled opposition, or he is just a relic of a time pre the propaganda, pre what Alex Carey's talking about, and has basically played himself into a corner. I found it quite tragic, and at that point I just didn't bother watching or listening to anything more that he had said. It just seemed to be irrelevant, that he just refused to believe that these people could be corrupt.
Yeah, Chomsky's a difficult one. I've of two minds. I have read some of his earlier stuff. I wasn't aware of that quote that you just read out, but he has said or adopted stances similar to that. Like I know that he's dismissed, for example, the relevance of the JFK assassination as being any way pertinent to events now, and we don't have time to go down that path at this point in time, but to dismiss something as seismic as that in history out of hand just struck me as being, well, odd to begin with. Yes. But he also did something similar with 9/11. And, you know, you just cannot dismiss these events and just say, oh, you know, all of the brouhaha or, you know, disagreement over the official stories of JFK or 9/11, you can't dismiss those as conspiracy theories. The whole conspiracy theory gets a bad rap, or the whole conspiracy theory construct, let me put it that way, gets a bad rap. I actually wrote a series of articles, though, sort of partly tongue-in-cheek. I should reproduce them for my Substack page, but the aim of these articles was actually to delve into the whole theory of conspiracy theories, look at some of the old conspiracy theories, but also explore, you know, how that thing came about, where it's used in the pejorative, and it did actually come about in the aftermath of the Kennedy assassination and the Warren Commission report, where they wanted to, and when I say they, I'm talking about the CIA and the people who wanted to cover up the real story behind the Kennedy assassination, to try and curb all this speculation in the wake of the Warren Commission report, which nobody in their right mind believed, to try and curb that, the CIA came up with the notion, oh, well, let's just dismiss these people as conspiracy theorists. And that's how this whole thing developed over a period of time. And it's been extraordinarily successful, Jason. To shut down a conversation now in any given sort of arena, you know, you've just simply got to come out and say, oh, you're conspiracy theorizing, or, you know, you're a conspiracy theory. But when I wrote these articles, I sort of covered quite a bit of territory, and including pointing to some of the biggest conspiracy theories that have been around since I was a kid, literally since I was a kid, that have since proved to be true. Yes. And, you know, it's there are many, many more of the conspiracy theories that have been doing the rounds for decades that have actually turned out to be true than ones who have not turned out to be true. And this is well documented by not just myself, but many, many others well and truly before me. So this notion of, you know, for listeners listening in today, whatever you do, do not dismiss somebody who's trying to talk to you about what is happening in the world. Don't dismiss them as a conspiracy theorist. Don't do that. Just listen to what they've got to say and go away and explore things for yourself, because you'll probably find that what they're talking about does have more substance than it doesn't. So that's a bit of advice there, but it's a bit of an in-joke, I suppose, you know, but it's one that has effectively curbed many people's curiosity to go and explore things for themselves. And like I said, it's been a very effective psychological operation.
Well, I guess the term conspiracy theory was also another way of wearing a badge of honor for all the autodidacts that are out there. These are the people that are self-taught. How else are you going to, unless something piques your interest, you go out there and do the research? And if it wasn't for someone like Oliver Stone making that magnificent film in 1991, many of us wouldn't have been educated or motivated to move on. I think for me, I was 19. I think I saw the film three times at the cinema. It changed my life. It certainly woke me up to what was going on, because we learnt at that point it was impossible for Lee Harvey Oswald to have shot that bullet, and therefore there was something else going on behind the scenes. On a separate note, my father used to love to have a bet, and he used to say, no, you don't bet on the favourites. If you bet on the favourites, you'll always lose. Well, that's the same idea when you have the concept here of betting on the most popular idea, that the big narrative, don't dare look against it, which basically says don't bet against the favourite. And there we are. We're going to take a quick break. It'll be the last one for the hour. We're going to come back and talk more with Greg Mabry. You're listening to TNT Radio.
the midterms, and America votes on November 8th. With his expert analysis and opinion, this is TNT Radio's Timothy Shea.
In the immortal words of President Ronald Reagan, there they go again. The same people that can't define what a woman is, who redefined how unemployment and inflation are calculated, just today have changed the definition of the word recession. Well, let me help them out here. A woman is an adult female with an XX genotype. A recession is two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. So why has Grandma Yellen changed the definition of the word recession this week? Because next week, the GDP numbers are out, and they are almost certain to show that we have indeed had two consecutive quarters of negative GDP growth. The reality, of course, is that inflation is not 9.1%, but well over 17%, probably over 20%. The reality is that we've been in a recession for a lot longer than the last two quarters. But we can't have people thinking that President Biden isn't the best president in history, can we? From MAGAInstitute.com, this is Timothy Shea for TNT Radio.
It's 4 a.m., Monday, and you're literally sucking baby snot through a tube because she's congested. Man, that's love. And if you love her that much, love her enough to make sure she's buckled in the right car seat. To make sure your child's in the right seat for their age and size, visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Show them you love them. Keep them safe. Visit nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
We need a recalibration of government.
Today's News Talk Radio, TNT.
Welcome back to the Jason Q Citizen and Friends program. Greg, there was a concept, a term that came up in my research about 6 years ago. The term was confirmation bias. It was a phrase coined by psychologist Peter Wason, and it's the tendency of people to favor information that confirms or strengthens their beliefs or values and is difficult to dislodge once affirmed. The term was first used in a social media post by a fellow who called himself FBI Anon way, way, way back. And he was referring to Donald Trump as being very, very good at using said confirmation bias. And they were trying to explain in this particular story the idea of how he was so good in the media at getting his point across. And from there, you see all these new terms like we've talked about today. And another one, of course, that goes along with gaslighting confirmation bias is the idea of virtue signaling, the idea that I'm going to come out there and show off that I've done something, and the idea, look, I've had my vaccine, how good am I? And so should you. And I wonder if there is a psychological connection between the virtue signaling and propaganda itself. It's kind of like it's an affirmation of the propaganda. It's just the next stage of it. So if we're going to dismantle this stuff, we're going to have to identify all these different areas where you literally, like Lego bricks, you build them on top. You start with the propaganda, you get your confirmation bias, you get your virtue signaling, and then you get your people who cannot be unlocked. Do you see it that way? Could it be all sort of as simple to construct, or and is this a way that we could perhaps work to dismantle?
Look, I think that's all true, and I'm not Matthias Desmet here, here of the mass formation theory.
There's another term, yes.
Yes, exactly, and what you're talking about kind of, I think, sort of moves into that territory a little bit. But there's an interesting quote that I included in one of my essays. It might have been that one that we've been talking about. I just can't recall now, but. And it does pertain to this, things like, you know, confirmation bias and us buying into conspiracy theories, or if not buying into conspiracy theories. Mm. And of course, to extrapolate from that, to get back to Noam Chomsky, him saying, well, I don't believe that our institutions are corrupt. I mean, well, that's basically another way of saying that, you know, I don't believe in conspiracy theories. I don't believe that these people would conspire to be corrupt. Because if you're conspiring behind the scenes, then you are corrupt in some way, shape, or form. Why conspire? Yes. You know, you're conspiring to hide something from people. So that means that you are corrupt. That's one, for me, a definition of corrupt. Mm. But F. Scott Fitzgerald once said, you'll love this one. The test of a first-rate intelligence is the ability to hold two opposed views in mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. I'll send that through to you, Jason, on email, but that's a wonderful quote from F. Scott Fitzgerald, the writer of Great Gatsby, of course, for those listeners who may not recognize the name. But I thought that was a very whimsical way of putting it, and you could probably say that about Trump. Trump was probably a good example of somebody that, you know, I mean, Trump's not as stupid as what a lot of people claim he is. You know, they think he's a bit of an idiot, and I've never seen Trump as an idiot. He certainly has a style unto his own, but he like a lot of politicians, you know, they can and do. That's part of their job, is to hold two opposed views in their mind at the same time and still retain the ability to function. The problem is not enough people, not enough ordinary people, see through that. They don't understand that. They buy the propaganda. They imbibe the kind of the shill from the politicians, and they imbibe what the media tells them without giving it that much thought. And of course, the virtue signaling thing may have a lot to do with it. Oh, well, you know, the media is telling me, and the politicians are telling me, and my doctors are telling me that, you know, to be a responsible citizen and take care of my own health and do all this sort of stuff, I've got to go and get the vaccination, or I've got to wear a mask, or I've got to social distance. So, okay, in order for me to convey that to people around me, my friends and family and workmates, I'm going to wear that little badge on my chest, the little badge being, of course, the mask, and, of course, maybe showing them your vaccination shots and that you're standing 6 feet away from them. That's all this kind of me demonstrating that I'm playing ball and that I'm falling into line with the narrative. And what this does to people is it really sort of confines people in a little space. It doesn't give them a lot of room to, you know, get outside of that confirmation bias. That, you know, I mean, if you use the term with most people, they probably wouldn't quite understand what you were talking about. But it's essentially, basically, it's getting high on your own supply. Let's put it that way. You know, confirmation bias is simply, you know, finding something that confirms what you already know. And one of the best things that's ever happened to me in the last 10 years since I've been doing this, I guess probably one of the biggest revelations is that even though we're all susceptible to confirmation bias and we're all susceptible to propaganda, I have at least been able to, number one, recognize that I'm as susceptible to it as anybody else. But number two, I've actually had to make very concrete and conscious efforts to get away from that confirmation bias. I've had to change my views and ideas on a lot of things, Jason, over the years. And like I've said many a time, you know, I mean, I used to be a history teacher, and almost everything I ever taught my kids at school was bollocks, or there was a completely different story or a narrative to all of the key events in history. And for that, for me, that didn't happen overnight. It took a lot of effort, and it took a lot of time and thinking and mulling things over and talking with people and all that sort of thing. So, you know, it's not easy to get outside of that confirmation bias. It's not easy to get out of that kind of, I guess, intellectual rut that people are in. And, you know, we've been inculcated and indoctrinated with this stuff for years and years and years, and to think that people can get out of it overnight is not, you know, that's sort of something that's just not going to happen. Having said that, people have to make the effort, because there's a lot on the line now. And as I keep saying, we don't have a lot of time in which to take on board what's happening around us and then act accordingly.
I love the fact that you're able to say, like I say all the time, that we've all had to change our ideas and minds on things as we receive get new information. And so the term conspiracy theorist is clearly derogatory, and it's done to put people down and to victimize and to therefore make them not want to be a conspiracy theorist. To me, if someone says that to me, badge of honor, good on you. But I'd like to make this point that our very ability to be out there researching when the others aren't and they want to put this stuff on you, it's like being at school. Oh, you're the brain in the class. How dare you be smart and do your homework? Ridiculous insult. But really what we are is that it's the science of understanding information. So I'd like to say that if you're going to change the name of conspiracy theorist, no thanks. I'm actually an information scientist. How about that one? Yeah. When I see that news needs information needs to be adjusted, I'll go out there, find the data, and prove you wrong. Thanks very much. And it would be very interesting, wouldn't it, that the that we would flip that one around on them and say, no, sorry, mate, I'm an information scientist, and there you are.
I'll finish up. There was a fellow that used to do a lot of research on the JFK thing. I can't remember his name now off the top of my head, but he said, I don't mind being called a conspiracy theorist as long as I can call those who are anti-conspiracy theorists coincidence theorists. So, I wish I could remember his name, but I thought that was a great one, a coincidence theorist.
Exactly.
So we turn it back on them, you know.
Exactly, right. And yeah, isn't it amazing, though, that you can have a career where you went out there and were paid handsomely to, well, maybe a teacher, not so, but paid to educate children for an entire career. And then you realize that what you were doing was all wrong. And then you go out there and you're the crazy one. Now, Greg, that's just the way that it is. But it's certainly telling us all that where we are is where we are. We are in a big rush. Now, we have run out of time, so I'm going to have to say goodbye to you now, Greg, but certainly would like to speak to you again in a little while, because there's just so much more to follow up on. But the message of today is very, very clear. Be confident in what you know. Be out there and trying. There's so much more to do. Now, we are coming up to the news. Thank you, Greg, and you are listening to TNT Radio.